Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Chad Withrow from Outkick will join us in roughly 20 minutes. Always look forward to catching up with Chad to wrap up the week. But we are going to start this hour by continuing to react to our interview yesterday with Predators general manager Barry Trotz. Now, if you missed that interview, it was 35 minutes long. You can find it wherever you like to find your podcasts. We ran the gamut with Barry Trotz, and as I said yesterday, the one thing I appreciate about Barry Trotz is that he comes on this station, he comes on our show pretty much every week. There are scheduling conflicts sometimes, but he comes on the show, he answers our questions, no matter how tough they are, and I do give him credit for that. But this interview, man, seeing some of the reaction to it last night and even this morning, people are PO'd by some of the things that Barry Trotz said. Let's focus on one thing. The first question we asked Barry Trotz yesterday, why did he decide not to make a coaching change after another poor start to the season and with this week-long gap in between games? Here was what Barry Trotz had to say about that.
Well, very simply, a little bit of I believe our coaches have done a really good job. A record may not show it, but they are coaching their butts off. And, it's the easy thing to, as I said in the past, it's the easy thing to do. This is a shared responsibility with the players, myself, and the coaching staff. So I put a little bit more on the a shared responsibility. So from a player standpoint, we need more from we went out and got some players the last couple of years to add a little bit of offense, and they've come up a little bit dry in the front end. We've restructured our defense, got a lot younger on the back end. We've got five guys that are basically 25 years and younger, so there's not a lot of experience there, but at the same time, we feel that there's a lot of growth for them. So our plan hasn't changed, and the coaches and the management and even the players have been part of the plan, that we are in a little bit of a blend mode, and we were going to add some young guys. So that's my answer to that, is that that's the easy thing to do. If I didn't think the coaches were coaching and trying to make the players better, and putting in the time and the effort, then I would make a change. That's not anything. A little bit is, it falls on all three parties. So
that was Barry Trotz yesterday explaining the decision not to move on from Andrew Burnett despite the team's rough start to the season. The two phrases that fans have jumped all over, the really good job, quote unquote, that the coaching staff is doing, and the fact that the coaching staff is coaching their butts off. I have no doubt that Andrew Burnett and his coaching staff are coaching their butts off. I don't think they're dogging it out there. But the really good job thing is what people are really honing in on, just because of how poor the team's record is, not only this season, but when you include last season as well. So the other thing that I thought
Explain. Give me your opinion on, I guess the philosophical question is, can you be doing a good job if the record isn't good? Is it simply your record isn't good, so you cannot be doing a good job? Because I will give you the other side of the argument, but I want to hear the argument your opinion, or if there's a consensus of what the angry people are saying. It's a low-hanging fruit.
It's a really
team's
tough,
not doing well. Team wasn't really supposed to do well. So you should fire the coach.
It's a really tough sell when you hear AGM say, the coaches are doing a really good job, when you're the second worst team in the NHL. It's a tough sell. That would be my viewpoint of it. Again,
That's fair.
I'm not in the meetings. I go to practice occasionally. I've never gotten the vibe that Andrew Burnett and his coaching staff are like, hey, man, hey, guys, we stink. So let's just kind of run
mentally checked out.
Yeah,
yeah.
No,
because that does happen. I think coaches do get shell shocked at times, and
yeah,
they're just kind of waiting for the guillotine to fall.
Right.
When he's talking, I think, and listen, words are big for me, so I try to pay attention to people, like every word that they're saying, and you know, when he's saying the coaches are doing a really good job, I interpret that as they haven't quit on the team. The team hasn't quit on them. They're still coaching hard. And he's probably envisioning it like, okay, if I were to fire this coach right now, would this team change? Would it be any difference in this team changing?
Well, he said.
And I don't think there would. You may get a bump, but I think ultimately it comes back to the regressions to the means. They are who they are. But he sees, and Elliot talked about this. This team continues to fight. For whatever reason, they continue to fight, and they haven't shown that they have lost, that the locker room has been lost by the head coach. They continue to go out there. Are they a good team? Are the guys that they went out and got and planned on playing well, are they playing well? No, they're not. And that contributes to a lot of it. But I think had this team checked out on their coach, he would have been fired already. But him saying they're doing a really good job, I interpret that as in a tough situation. He understands because he talked about this. Yeah, I may have put him in this situation, you know, as well. So everybody takes the blame of this, but that coaching staff is still coaching hard, and those players are still playing. They're just not winning. They're just not equaling to wins.
Willie, you and I like to look under the hood, right? We like to look at all of the fancy stats, not just goals for, goals against, power play percentage, penalty kill percentage. And one of the things that Trotz tasked Brunette with doing is we need to defend better. And if you look under the hood and look at the shot quality that the Predators have allowed per game versus last season, they have improved in that area. The problem is most fans don't look under the hood. And I'm not blaming them for not doing that. But it's as simple as, well, Trotz said that Brunette needs to help this team defend better, and yet they're one of the worst teams in the league at allowing goals per game. So that's my point, is it's a tough sell for a lot of fans when the GM says the coach is doing a really good job, and yet you're near the bottom of the league. That would be my argument. But you said you had a counter argument.
Because I think you're right. It's a surface thing. He's trying to argue that he's looking beneath that because last year, we're talking about analytically here, they were giving up a lot of quality. One of the bottom five or six teams in the league per night. And they were getting blown out a lot. He has shaved off with the new... He was challenged, right? Hey, I want you to meld. Let's play more defensively. Let's defend better. Let's play more to the talent that we have. And so he's done what Barry Trotz asked him to do. And I don't know that Andrew Brunette really would choose to do that. Like, if everything was equal, I don't think he wants to play like that. It's like in football, if you wanted to play more of a spread, up-tempo offense, and the GM tells you, you got to play ball control, two tight end, smash mouth, you might do it, and a good coach can adapt, but it maybe in your heart is not the way you would choose to do it. So I think he's trying to give Andrew Brunette credit for doing what he was tasked to do. Because they are giving up about close in the neighborhood of half a goal less expected per game. And that is what a coach can really lay out and say, this is what you asked me to do. But as you said, it's not yielding results. They're in a lot of close games, but they're not finding ways to score. And it is probably tougher to score when you play defensively minded first. And they're still allowing more goals than they need to be allowing. Like, I think UC Saros has won 3 2-1 games so far. Like, they just don't explode and blow you out enough to be able to overcome a rough night. They've got to be a stickler for detail. So, is that coaching? I think that's where you can argue. I think that's what Barry Trotz means. So, I just don't want people to think he's crazy by saying, or they're doing a good job. It's not a throwaway line. That's what he's seeing when he's saying they're doing a good job. But I think he also knows that the results are not what they need to be.
Let me get nerdy with you guys for a second, which is just my default setting. But let me get nerdy with you guys for a moment. The Predators were 26th in the NHL last season in shot quality allowed per game. 26th. This season, they're 14th. So
that's a measurable improvement.
That is an improvement. However, the goals against, the actual goals against, are still way too high as well. Hence why it's such a tough sell. One thing Barry Trotz also said.
And, of course, they're not scoring any goals themselves.
That too.
And that's the hardest thing, I think, for a fan to see is they're just not scoring.
The other thing Barry Trotz said that I thought was interesting, again, we talked to him for more than 30 minutes. I recommend you find a nice, comfortable chair, put on some AirPods, and listen to it. It's going to take you a little bit.
Maybe speed it up. You know, we do it like 1.5 speed.
Maybe.
Yes.
He if said, you're pressed for time.
He said that they've been in a lot more games this year than last year. Here is how I measured that. I wanted to look at the amount of actual game time, minutes and seconds, that the Predators are within one goal. So either up one, down one.
Or tied.
Yeah. I wanted to see the percentage of time they've played this season within one score. 75.9%. 75.9%. Last season, it was 72.6%. So an improvement, but not a significant improvement. The Predators have eight combined
losses. They went down in over the last three games. It went down because they let it get out of the let the horse get out of the barn in New York and in Sweden in the second game.
Eight combined losses this season by two-plus goals, including seven losses by three-plus goals. And before you ask, Willie, because as I was writing these numbers down, I knew you were about to ask this question. Well, how many of those seven losses by three-plus goals included empty net goals? Three of those seven losses. So four of those seven three-plus goal losses did not include empty net goals. So Barry Trotz says they're in a lot more games this year than last year. I guess based on those numbers, it's a little better, but not the same improvement that they've shown in terms of limiting shot quality. So again, this is me getting nerdy, which again is my default setting. But to the casual Predators fan, they're not hearing any of that. They don't have the access to the stuff that we do, all that stuff.
Fans don't care about close losses.
That is true
they
as
don't.
Well.
So you can have a million close losses. Fans don't care. They want wins. That's basically
precisely
what it boils down to.
Precisely. Let's go to Nate from Columbia on our phone line. Nate, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
What's up, guys? I've got a few things here that because I was in and out with the Elliot and Barry interviews yesterday. But I did go back this morning and listen to both of them very carefully. And I loved, Adam, when you basically pushed back when Trotz said the improvement with the blend was that they were winning game. I mean, it's not enough. The biggest thing that I have taken from yesterday and this morning is when, and I don't know if Willie and Adam have listened to 32 Thoughts yet, so spoiler alert if you have.
We have. Not. Elliot mentioned us. We always love when we get a shout out from our friend Elliot.
Yeah. He dinged me for a lack of attendance in his.
I laughed so hard when I heard that. Anyways.
They were excused absences. I got a permission slip.
The biggest problem that I have with Elliot's comments was that it seems like they don't know where they want to go. And I am very concerned about that.
Where do you think they should go, Nate?
I mean, I put it to this like this to one of my friends earlier today. It's like the Preds are a tree that's leaning towards your house, that's going to damage your house. Eventually, enough wind is probably going to push that tree over and damage your house if you don't cut it down. I mean, I feel like they need to still keep you know, driving into the skid of where they're eventually going to go, where it's basically going to be a complete rebuild. They're just they're delaying the inevitable.
Thank you for the call, Nate.
I think it's
a fair point.
Yeah, but I think he understands where they want to go. But getting there has been the problem. And he talked about it a lot, that gap, those players that, you know, need to come on in order for some of this stuff that he's envisioning to happen. He thought it was going to happen a little sooner, but it hasn't. Because he always referred, throughout the whole interview, he referred to, you know, that group of individuals, those young group of guys, you know, developing, and they're going to be a part of the next sort of iteration of the Predators, because he talked about, you know, Wempeka and that group of guys. And he said, listen, it's just taking a little bit longer. So it's not like they don't know where to, like, where they want to go. But what I realize, and I'm still a novice at this, that hockey's not like any other sport. Hockey's not like basketball or football, where in a year you can, your young guys can come in and all of a sudden they're ready and they can help your team win right now. What I'm understanding now about hockey is that ain't the way business is done. And I think people want it to be done, like fans want it to be done. But, Willie, you've named several teams that have been in this for the longest, and it just doesn't happen overnight. But I know fans want it to.
Elliot made a good point yesterday about if you're trying to sell your fans on a rebuild, this is a great season to do it. Anaheim looks awesome. Chicago's playing well. San Jose is exciting. And those teams have been bad for a long time.
But I think the tough sell is how long it took for them to get from when they last were good until now they're just scratching possibly being good. Anaheim looks like they are getting there. I would hope what you could sell, if, because I think there is time to pivot to what Nate is talking about, right? If they chose, wouldn't you say, Adam, you could probably wait another month, month and a half. If it continued, I think you would then legitimately be able to look at Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Stamkos, the veterans, and say, I've given you as much time as I can for you guys to make something of this season. I don't want to take it out from under you. I'm going to give you as much time as I can. But if it's not better by X date, I don't know what that date would be, January 1, January 15th, you can pivot, still probably finish low in the standings and start moving forward. And then what I would sell is they've already laid the foundation of a rebuild because they've amassed a pretty good, depending on what source you look at, top 10 to top 12 pool prospect. Not of elite players, maybe, but the next group of good, solid players, they feel like they've got a chance there, which hopefully would speed it up and not have it take 7 years, but maybe a couple of years. Is that something you could sell? Because Elliot was talking about, well, what do you call it? Because it's hard to use the R word, right?
Yes.
When you throw that out there, and you're like, oh, 7 years of, oh, man, what are we going to do for seven
Remember,
years?
Remember, David Poile called it a competitive rebuild. He had to add the qualifier.
Right.
The competitive
and now blend.
Blend is the
Elliot
new.
Laughed when Derek mm-hmm. threw out blend was the word,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
He's like, oh, is that what they're saying? Yeah.
But if you're going to do it, I think if you're going to do it, like Elliot said, you just need to do it now. Like, waiting another year to try to say, well, let's hold on another year. You know, Josi missed a bunch of games, yada, yada. Let's hold on. The longer you hold on, the more impatient the fan base gets.
Let's quickly go to Bill on our phone line. Bill, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I'm a season ticket holder. Not normally. I listen to the show all the time. I normally don't call in, but I had to call in. The problem I got with all this, and I was excited when they hired Brunette and Trotz. The problem I got is this. Since Brunette has been coach, our record is 36-54-12. We've gotten off to bad starts every season. We have some young players in Milwaukee that, in my opinion, need to come up and play, for example, Kimmel, and they won't put him in the lineup. I think Trotz has traded away a couple of key players that we really should have kept, Carrier being one, because, frankly, I don't see much in Barron. I think the guy's not very good. Secondly, I wish he would have kept Kiefer Sherwood, and he didn't do that. And I think he's made some bad personnel decisions. And I understand what he's trying to do, but what he was trying to do and what he's accomplished, it's not working. And they need to make a change. It's not working.
Thank you for the call, Bill. Let's go to Dylan in Antioch. Dylan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, I'll make it quick. I believe Trotz when he says the coaching our butts off. I believe that 100%. Then that's exactly the problem. They've reached their ceiling with Brunette. He's had these guys. He is not making it work. This is his max coaching. If that's true, if he is coaching his butt off, we got to see a different coach in here. And it feels like a lame duck, you know. If he's not going to fire Brunette now, are we going to sit around and just see all this for the rest of the season? He's already had enough time with these guys. It's time to move on. Thank you.
Thanks, Dylan. We'll continue to take your reaction because we have a lot of it on our text line as well. So we will get back to your reaction to our Barry Trotz interview from yesterday. Again, if you missed it, you can find it wherever you find your podcasts. As Willie and Derek recommended, maybe play it on 1.5 speed.
Exactly.
Because the actual interview was more than 30 minutes long. And, hey, we love talking to Barry Trotz every week.
But if you got a nice long treadmill ride or, you know, bike ride, yeah, it's perfect.
You're going to be stuck in traffic?
Ride, yeah.
Perfect. 615-737-1025. Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us coming up next. We'll get back into the NFL and college football with our friend Chad. That's coming up next. 615-737-1025. The MTSU Blue Raiders will take on Sam Houston tomorrow at 2. Catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3 with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 1025. The game. Tomorrow's college football game of the week is Kentucky at Vanderbilt at 2:30 on 102.5 The Game and 94.9 The Fan. Presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com.
Little Friday night here, back in the day. You're envisioning your Friday night with Cool and the Gang. D-Base and I are getting ready. Going to go out. Adam's going to be driving. He's going to pick us up.
And where are we going?
We're going out on the town.
Where do we go? We're going out on the town.
We're going to meet up with the fellas.
Hitting the town.
Hopefully find, where do we go? The tenderonis?
Yeah, tenderonis.
Find you some tendies.
We're going to go get some tendies.
Yeah. Oh, man. Let's go to our phone line and bring in our friend Chad Withrow.
We mean chicken tenders. That's what we mean.
We'll pick up Chad. We'll pick
exactly.
up Chad on the way.
Get Chad, yeah. on
Chad,
the way.
Chad can come, too. He's brought to you by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa.
We can get A
Cool
Moment's
Springs.
Peace after that.
Oh, see?
You know?
There's not going to be any moments of peace with the four of us going out on the town.
This is the night, gentlemen. This is the night.
You'll see the light.
The Friday night for me growing up was leaving Mount Juliet and going to Second Avenue in downtown Nashville, and we ended up at Laser Quest in Sbarro. The biggest loser moves ever. I can guarantee you there were absolutely no tenderoni around Laser Quest or Sbarro, but that's where we ended up.
There will be no Sbarro slander on this program.
Oh, my goodness.
Nor Laser Quest. Laser Quest on the right night could hit the spot.
Yeah.
Just not too often, you know. Yeah. Not every night.
I just never hit the right night, apparently. That was my problem.
No ladies' nights at Laser Quest. But, Chad. No.
Not likely to find the ladies.
No, no. Yeah. No. But, Chad, you are well aware of how long it's been since Tennessee won in the Swamp. And, frankly, Vanderbilt needs Tennessee to win. So the Vols are ranked next week, assuming Vanderbilt also takes care of business tomorrow against Kentucky. How should Vols fans feel about the matchup tomorrow at Florida?
I think Vols fans already feel like it's already over. They've already lost. Look, this is where battered ball syndrome pops in, right? Like, it's a fan-based thing. They've seen this story a million times over in so many different ways. I mean, in sometimes the same way. Tennessee lost in back-to-back trips to the Swamp in 2015 and 2017 by 63-yard touchdowns to end the game. Twice. They lost to a 63-yard touchdown in 2015 and 2017. So, look, it's been a house of horrors for Tennessee. And even in the wins over Florida, guys, which they've had here recently, which has been a nice change, they haven't played well. They didn't play well a year ago in Knoxville. They won in overtime against the Florida team that was struggling at the time. You know, in 2022, that great season, that was Anthony Richardson's best game as a Florida Gator, and it came down to the very last play. I mean, there's plenty of examples. Tennessee in the first half in 2016 in a win looked terrible, fell behind 21-3 and came back and won with Josh Dobbs and Josh Malone and those guys. So it's been a series where Tennessee, for whatever reason, has just not played well. Here's the deal for Josh Heupel in Tennessee in this game. And if you want to erase the psyche of Vols fans and get rid of battered Vols syndrome and all that, play like this is 2021 again. Coach like it's 2021. Go in there with house money. Don't coach scared. Go for it on 4th and 5. Go for it on 4th and 7 at times. Roll the dice. This is an offense that can score points. They don't need to play tight. To me, that's the big key in this game. And I think Josh Heupel at times this year has coached tight. And we never saw that in the first year. They overachieved in year one with that team that was headed to NCAA sanctions by going 7-5. And they scored a ton of points doing so. And he never coached scared. He needs to resuscitate that version of himself tomorrow night in the Swamp, in my opinion. If Tennessee does that, if Joey Aguilar doesn't throw 3 picks, I think they go down there and win. But, you know, the bad ball syndrome in me will say that they're definitely going to go down there and play terrible and find a way to lose.
Chad, I saw this headline on CBSSports.com, and I would love your opinion on it. There was a report that if Lane Kiffin takes the LSU job, the Tigers are open to Ed Orgeron returning as an assistant on his staff. How do you think that pairing would work at LSU if that report actually comes to fruition?
Well, I'll tell you this. Keith Carter and Ole Miss, they better turn off those cell phones that are issued to Lane Kiffin, because if Ed Orgeron's a part of it, they're going to be calling those Ole Miss signees quickly. If it's anything like Tennessee in 2009, famously they were texting and calling Tennessee recruits and telling them to go to USC when Ed Orgeron and Lane Kiffin bolted last time. I think it would be fine, you know, because Ed Orgeron is sort of Lane Kiffin's muscle when they've coached together in the past. He's a great recruiter. He knows the state of Louisiana. They're going to get great players, whoever their coach is. So I think it would be fine if they decided to go that route. You know, the whole Kiffin standoff is really interesting to me, because we've seen these documentaries and all these things about how Kiffin does hot yoga now, and he's a family man, and he does this and that, and he's a changed guy. And I'm watching this whole saga, guys. I see no difference from this and 2009.
Really? That was going to be my follow-up, because I think that's a great question.
And Saban, right, Willie? I mean, think about how he couldn't show up to meetings on time. And Nick Saban cut him loose early, you know, when he was preparing for a national championship run.
Because don't you think his image from afar, it looks like he's grown up some. Like he, you know, some of the crazy stuff. And Chad, you and I were working on a daily basis back in the days when he was the Raiders coach. And then that one year in Knoxville, there was all kinds of stuff. And it got even more zany when he went to USC. Remember the press conference he did? The quote-unquote press conference where he kicked the press out and just answered questions from his SID. Like, he did so many bizarre things. Like, I feel like he's grown out of a lot of that. You say no.
I think that he's grown. Like, I don't want to shortchange, Willie, the fact that he's grown up a lot over the years. He has in a lot of ways. But I think Lane Kiffin has learned more of – he has changed, and he knows how to act now. I don't think he even knew how to act as a younger coach. I don't think he inherently changed who he is. And I think the fact that he is willing and able to sort of dangle this carrot out and seemingly troll all fan bases involved throughout this whole process with some of the things that he tweets about a big decision upcoming and everything else, it's Lane Kiffin is always going to be Lane Kiffin. I think that he's matured in the way that he acts and the way he displays himself publicly when he's interviews and everything else. But I think deep down, he's kind of always this guy. I could argue there's no reason to leave Ole Miss if you're Lane Kiffin. You've got him in the playoff right now. They got one loss. You're going to have financial backing. You know, you basically got a lifetime contract with that school right now. They could win to Ole Miss, but it's not the era of you got to go to LSU or Florida if you get the opportunity. Now, I could also understand why someone would leave Ole Miss for LSU or Florida, but I just don't think that he's changed, but he's not completely changed who he was even back in 2009 when we were covering him daily.
Chad, I just want you to know that someone just texted in all caps, about Lane Kiffin. He has not changed one bit. Lane Kiffin is a pathetic excuse of a man, a sociopathic, narcissistic Judas of a man.
Yeah, that's a Judas of a man.
Oh,
I'm assuming that guy also thinks he's going to lose tomorrow in Florida because he's got battered ball syndrome also.
Perhaps.
Whoever sent that text in, yeah. No, look, I think that he's changed a lot, and I think that he's improved a lot. I still just think as a coach and how he looks at situations like this, he's always going to be Lane Kiffin.
Now, Chad, I think I heard this on you guys' show, and if I didn't, please let me know. And you were talking about, I believe, this whole Lane Kiffin saga and how potentially there could be some type of change with these coaches, because what's happening now, and I think this is what you guys mentioned, that now any coach within the conference can sort of circumvent it and try to undermine you and get your coach even while you're in the playoffs. So Sankey's setting up some type of system where, hey, listen, just like the portal, you can't talk to coaches during this time, especially coaches that are in the running for a national championship, because what happens is it causes a distraction, and that's not fair to the players. And however Lane's going to play this, if he's playing coy because he wants more money or is he really going to leave him, ultimately this brings more attention and distractions to his team.
Yeah, no, you're right, D-Mace. We were talking about this on our show. And it's not – there's no system in place. There's no rule in place. Mm-hmm. But we all know that Greg Sankey does not encourage this type of stuff, especially with a team that's headed to the playoffs. Like, this is not something that Sankey wants to see as one SEC program – or two programs trying to snipe another SEC program's coach, especially while they're in the mix for the playoff. I mean, Chris Lowe reported it yesterday. I mean, there's stipulations in the playoff committee's language of how they pick teams that could dock Ole Miss spots in the playoff race based on Lane Kiffin leaving, which I think is total crap, by the way. I really don't like – I didn't like the Jordan Travis thing at Florida State and what they used with that. And I don't think – if we're about student-athletes and the players, I mean, give me a break. What does that tell the players if they're going to move them down four spots in the playoff because their coach left and they had no say in that at all? I really don't understand that. But, yeah, the SEC needs a rule in place. The NFL functions very well because coaches actually have to honor a contract. And you can't flirt with another job when you have one if you're a head coach. You can't go somewhere else. If the SEC or the SEC and the Big Ten got together and said, hey, let's do an NFL model where we can't go and snipe other programs' coaches, but you have to go to another league to get a coach. I think that would help everyone, but as we know, the almighty dollar points us in every direction, and agents and coaches right now aren't going to want that.
Now, Chad, with programs like, and right now it's Vandy, but programs like Vandy that have been in, you know, sort of this regression for so long, but now showing some progress and ensuring that their program get better, and you have a season like you have where you're potentially on that crisp cusp of making it to a college football playoffs, and you don't make it, say you lose another game or two, does that take steam away from the program? And I'm just saying programs like Vandy's in general, where you've been the doormat for so long, and then you get a window where you have an opportunity to win and you don't take advantage of that window of going into the college football playoffs.
Well, I don't know that it takes away steam from Vandy, but I'm also very interested to see what Vandy becomes post Diego Pavia. And I don't know if you guys saw the story, but the Diego Pavia story could continue possibly based on a lawsuit that he's involved in with Joey Aguilar.
Yes.
So Tennessee and Vandy kind of joining forces with this, which is crazy.
Who would have thought?
This is a broader topic. Like, I love this idea for Tennessee, and I hate this idea for college football. And I thought the same thing about Diego Pavia coming back. Man, great thing for Diego Pavia. He's going to get paid a lot of money, and he's going to go back to Vandy. Great thing for Vandy fans. Terrible for college football that we're allowing guys to go to junior college as long as they want and seemingly play as long as they want. But with Vanderbilt, I think it's all about keeping Clark Lee for the future. It's all about Jerry Kill and Tim Beck and keeping that, you know, triumvirate together. And if you can do that, they could probably go plug and play and still be a very competitive team with a new quarterback next year. Now, here's the big thing for me that I'm disappointed if I'm Vandy and I'm disappointed if I'm Clark Lee. Let's say they go 10-2. Let's say they take care of business against Kentucky. Let's say they go to Knoxville and beat a three-loss Tennessee team at the time, if Tennessee wins in the Swamp. And they get left out of the playoffs? Are you kidding me? I mean, 10-2? Like, if you're Clark Lee or you're a Vandy fan, you're looking around saying, we went 10-2 in the SEC and got left out of the playoffs. And we're just going to a New Year's Day Bowl. Or we're going to the Citrus Bowl or whatever it is. That would be terribly disappointing. And that's where they are right now, unless some things break the right way around them.
All right, Chad, here's one for you. Texas A&M is 10-0. I'm the coach of Texas A&M. And I've got Samford, the Bulldogs. We're going to take care of them. We're 11-0. We're playing Texas. I know I want to win a national championship. I've got Marcel Reed as my quarterback. I'm not playing him against Texas. We're in the playoffs, whether we win or lose that game. I'm taking him, taking a couple other of my key guys. I'm resting them, just like an NFL coach would do in week 17 of a season. Am I crazy?
No, not at all.
I mean, think about the ramifications of that decision if you chose to do it. That would just upset the whole apple cart.
And here's where you get into sort of a collusion type scenario. First off, if I'm Greg Sankey, I'm sending Mike Yucko. Looks like he's a bourbon guy. Just looking at that boiler on him. I think he likes some brown liquor. Don't know that, but just looks like he'd like it. I'd send him a case of his favorite bourbon to do that, to give Texas a big win over an undefeated. Because if you can set up a scenario where you get another SEC team in, and I'm not saying Texas will be in that spot because they have the three losses, but in a different year where it's a team with two losses and they need a huge win over a highly ranked team, if some team decides to rest guys, boy, you're scoring bonus points with the SEC by doing that, because you're giving another member school an easy path to the playoffs in doing that. Now, a lot of things could happen, and Texas may get their way back in to the playoff mix for all that we know, even with three losses. But if that was the scenario, I mean, that's going to raise a lot of eyebrows. If Texas A&M set all their guys, I don't think they're going to against Texas, but if any type of scenario played out like that, undefeated team says, I'm going to rest my guys against a two-loss SEC team and basically gives them the playoff in that game, that's going to be a big problem.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Friday, and he is now brought to you by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. Chad, great stuff as always. Try not to beat yourself up too much before the game tomorrow. We'll talk next week.
Guys, I'm at peace. I've already accepted the fact of what's going to happen. I'm just going to sit back and watch. Not going to stop me from getting angry or throwing something at the TV, but I know exactly what's going to happen. Now, all I need to know is, when are we meeting at Sbarro? So once you guys let me know that.
Is the Sbarro still open?
Yeah, we'll find a Sbarro.
Sbarro's usually open.
If we have to go to a mall somewhere, we'll meet up at the mall.
It's hard to find a mall that's open these days, too. Thank you, Chad. We'll catch up next week.
All right, have a good weekend. See you guys.
615-737-1025. We can react to what Chad had to say. You can as well. We'll also get back into your reaction on our Barry Trotz interview from yesterday, because we have a lot of reaction we did not get to before we talked to Chad. So 615-737-1025. DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate now at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The game this Sunday, the NFL Game of the Week, Eagles versus Cowboys at 325 on 1025. The game, the NFL Game of the Week, is presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. While we were talking to Chad Withrow about Lane Kiffin, David Janes sent us this update from Keith Carter, the Vice Chancellor for Intercollegiate Athletics. What a title.
It's a long title.
I'm not going to read the whole thing, but here is part of what Keith Carter said about Lane Kiffin. Quote, Coach Kiffin is focused on preparing our team for the Egg Bowl, and together we want to ensure that our players and coaches can concentrate fully on next Friday's game. The team is on the cusp of an unprecedented season, and it's imperative they feel the support of the Ole Miss family in the week ahead. An announcement on Coach Kiffin's future is expected this Saturday following the game.
Drama.
That's ominous. It's ominous.
I know.
What could that announcement be?
I've decided to Keep my talents
in Oxford.
In Oxford.
Yes.
So just think of the scenarios, right? Scenario A, they win. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm staying. Everybody goes crazy. Big party at the Grove. All is well. They win. He says, I'm leaving.
Boo his ass.
They're going to the playoffs. He's not the coach. That's a scenario, right?
Yeah, it potentially it can be.
And then there's
we don't know
the scenario of they get upset, they lose, and then on top of it, he says, I'm out of here. And there's fires and riots. I don't know what will happen.
In the Grove.
Something would. But two of those three scenarios are not really good for Ole Miss. But, like, can you imagine? Like, that's never happened. Plenty of times a coach is bolted and some interim guy coaches the bowl game, right? That happens mm-hmm. all the time.
Of course.
But a playoff team?
Not a playoff team, no.
You can skip the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Cam Ward skipped the second half of the Pop-Tarts Bowl last season. People bring that up from time to time.
How could that happen? Like, Chad mentioned it, like, the NFL definitely has taken steps that you don't raid another team's coach. Mm-hmm. I can remember Jeff Fisher. I was sitting in the trailer. Mm-hmm. You can appreciate this, D-Mace. Remember the trailers?
Yes.
In Bellevue? Before the Titans had a practice facility at all, they had makeshift trailers, like, you know, mobile homes, basically. And one of them was for the media. And he would come in and do his press conference. And Mike Ditka had left the Bears. The Bears' job was open. And just like a college-minded question, somebody in the media said, hey, you used to play for the Bears. You were on the 85 team. You know, you coach, you got ties there. You know, would you be interested in that job? And Jeff Fisher had to almost explain, like, in the NFL, that's not what we do. When you're under contract, you do not.
Yeah.
You can't just hop to another team. That's just not how they roll. So how that world ever got there, but that would be a whole new scenario of a coach bolting when his team is actually in the playoffs. But it probably won't be the last time.
Probably not. Especially if it's done in this situation. But I think if it is done in this situation, there's going to be Ole Miss. There's going to be some blowback, and it's going to probably force Sankey and, you know, these other commissioners to get together and put something in place where this doesn't happen again. And it would only be right because they're trying to do that, and rightfully so. They're trying to do that with the transfer portal and when it happened and when it can't happen. And you're right. You need to make sure you have some guidelines, parameters, when you can't, move as a student. But wouldn't it be, smart to do that with your coaches as well so you don't run into a situation where not only are you getting – you know, undermined or poached by coaches. It's coaches within your own conference. And I'm sure that's not what they want.
Adam, would you feel at all icky? Let's just say it's LSU. And you're watching the coach you're luring away from your rival after his team has just sealed a tremendous year, they're going to the playoffs, and you're stealing their coach. Would you feel the least a bit guilty, icky?
Win at all costs, as far as I'm concerned. By the way, Matthew from Jolton says, you never skip on Pop-Tarts. Agreed.
Huh?
You never skip on Pop-Tarts. I said, you can skip the Pop-Tarts Bowl, but not the college football playoff game.
Oh, yeah.
The Pop-Tarts Bowl, the best part about that is when they burn the sentient Pop-Tart alive, live on television.
There's going to be multiple Pop-Tarts
this
year.
What? Are they going to burn all of them
y'all
alive?
Like, y'all still like Pop-Tarts?
I have a question about Pop-Tarts.
Whoa. Y'all still eat Pop-Tarts?
I haven't in a long time.
Yeah,
I did.
It's been a minute for me, but okay. Still.
Back like in the college dorm.
Oh, of course.
Pop-Tarts.
It's a delicacy.
Stickler. Yeah. Staple. Did you guys actually toast the Pop-Tarts?
Absolutely, I did.
Every time?
Not every time.
No, I would eat them cold from
the cold
from
Pop-Tart
time.
Right out of the silvery bag. Did you do that?
Yeah, of course.
I did it on the run many times. I think I did that way more often. That was my default, and not toast it up.
I had to toast it a little bit. It had to be warm.
The last time I had a Pop-Tart, it's dangerous taking your toddler to the grocery store, but I took Arla to the grocery store sometime earlier this year, and he saw the frosted strawberry Pop-Tarts. They had them right out in front. Dad, I want those. I said, okay, I'll buy the box. We got home. We took one bite. I don't like these. Mm-hmm. So
good for him.
Good for you.
Couldn't go to waste. Him. I finished the one that he ate, and then I don't think we ate any
what?
Other ones.
Yeah, just you didn't have a throwback out. Moment and just
not with Pop Tarts.
Done with them, huh?
That's like eating stage.
We haven't even talked about this.
That's like eating stage planks.
We'll get to stage planks.
We'll
get to
stage planks later.
We have a lot of questions about stage planks.
Like shade being thrown.
I was more of a Dunkaroos guy myself. Shout out to Dunkaroos.
Dunkaroos?
Yes.
What is that?
You've never heard of Dunkaroos?
Gosh, you guys are so old. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Lane Kiffin, college football, Pop-Tarts, stage planks, Dunkaroos. It doesn't matter. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, let's get into the Titans, who take on the Seahawks on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. And when we discuss Cam Ward, we like to discuss Cam Ward in context. So is there something specific that we should keep in mind when discussing Cam Ward? How much should it influence our opinion of Cam Ward's performance so far this season? We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.